are out in force on Lakeshore Drive this morning. Usaba Lakeshore Drive.
They've got a beautiful day for it, too.
Seems like more people on bikes this year than in years past.
This, you mean for Bike the Drive or in general?
Yeah. No. Yeah, Bike the Drive.
Yeah. So we had, I think, I had a number here as to how many were part of this.
All I saw on my drive in were cars with bicycles attached to them, you know, so they could get to Lakeshore Drive and do the ride.
Yeah,
I was going to say that sounds like cheating.
Yeah, it seems like if you're going to commit to that, you ought to just do it from your home. Sorry if you live in Gurnee.
Oh, yeah.
It's a long drive.
It's a hike.
Yeah. Yeah, but, you know, looks fun. My other observation this morning, aside from seeing a lot of people with bikes attached to their cars, there are a lot of crazy drivers out this morning. I've seen more crazy antics.
There's always something when I come down.
Yeah, I imagine the like when you come down early, so you've got the big drunkie factor still going.
Yeah, especially on the holidays, like tomorrow morning or like New Year's Day.
Yeah, I think that might be it because it's a holiday. A lot of people cutting in front of other people, and you know, people on the expressway going 30 miles an hour.
Yeah, I feel like that's more dangerous than speeding.
Yeah, it's like it's kind of a crazy morning today.
I had a scary moment some time back coming into work here on a Sunday morning, and we enter the garages for these buildings from Lower Columbus Drive.
Right, because we're too important to park on the street.
That's right.
We have our private entrances.
Right. But we have our chauffeurs pull us right into the garage.
There was a guy behind me that was following rather close. Uh-oh. And, you know, you get a little concerned when it's 3:45 in the morning and, you know, he's following you close. But at the intersection of Lower Randolph and Lower Columbus, he zoomed around me and got in the middle of the intersection and just did a bunch of donuts.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I mean, just really, really was turning that car in circles. It scared me. It scared me.
Those roads aren't... I feel like if you do that, you're just asking to get smoked with a pothole.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Those aren't the roads you want to be doing donuts in.
No.
Which are the roads, Jack?
I would say a parking lot.
Where do you do your donuts?
You know, out in... You got to do it in a parking lot, right? You don't want to mess your car up?
I like to go to the old Tribune parking lot.
Yeah.
In the back there.
The old stomping grounds.
I drove by there yesterday, and where we used to park is just an empty lot. I thought they were going to build some big building over there.
Yeah, I'm looking over there right now.
Yeah, I think you can see it from here.
It is empty. It's totally empty.
Yeah, they were supposed to build some big high-rise over there.
Why we should buy it, make it a parking lot, and make a bunch of money.
Why'd they kick us out if we're not going to do anything over it? I mean, sure, there's a nice mattress store where the radio station used to be, but that's about it.
I'm sad I never worked over there.
Oh, wow. That's right. You never did.
No.
Did you? You've only been
I've only been here
since we were in 303.
Only heard my glowing words about it.
That's all I've heard. I've heard plenty of stories about it. It seemed fun, but
I got very sentimental the last day there.
Mm-hmm.
I really did. I slowly walked through the halls.
Yeah. Kissing the floor.
No, I didn't go that far.
By building. By cafeteria.
Took pictures, you know.
By headliners, the cafeteria, where food was always sort of iffy. By lobby. That was a little sentimental.
Sure it was.
As much as I tease about it.
No, it was.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, we are thrilled beyond compare to welcome back to the program one Mr. Dave Schwann after taking his 83rd birthday week off.
I think you're jumping the gun by about 14 years
happy
there,
birthday.
Friend.
Happy
Thank
birthday.
Thank you. Thank you.
May you live another 83 years.
Oh, yeah.
And
wait a minute, where do you get this 83
and
figure?
Did you have a nice time?
We had a great time. Yes.
Where'd you go?
Well,
explained everybody.
We were. I was out in Virginia with my girlfriend.
I had
Gilda.
Somebody tailing you and following.
Oh, well, so that explains that.
It's just a security measure.
That explains right. The dark-colored vehicle that was parked across the street at all times.
The guy that I usually have following you who likes to do donuts the street. I had him tail you out there.
It sounds like you need a new guy now, Dean.
Yeah. Yeah, his cover's been blown. So where'd you go again?
Went to Virginia. We spent the week with my girlfriend, Gilda.
Yeah.
And she is in a play right now. So we attended a bunch of rehearsals for the play.
What is the play?
The play may not be that well known, but I can tell you it's a very good play. It's called Mornings at Seven.
Mornings at Seven.
Mornings at Seven. It goes back to the 1930s. Hmm. It's about four sisters who all live very close together in the same neighborhood. And all but one are married, and the interaction of their own lives and some very interesting things revealed in terms of there. But it's a very, very good show. She's got a terrific part in it.
Yeah.
And
she's one of the sisters.
She's one of the sisters playing a lead in this. Yeah, she's playing Arinetta.
Did you run lines with her?
I did. I did. We ran lines every day.
So you played one of the sisters?
I read every part but hers, so to give her the cues and so forth, yes.
Which sisters did you play?
All of them.
Yeah, I played Ida, Corey, Cora, and Esther.
Okay.
Then I was Thor, and then I was
Thor.
Thor, it's the short for Theodore.
Was this a Marvel movie? You were Thor.
I was. There was another character named David in it.
You were ready for that one.
Yeah, I was ready for that one. Another character, Carl, is in it. So nice. I read all the parts. But the show will take place in Manassas, Virginia.
Hmm.
Very historical town, and you know me. You know, there were two Civil War battles fought there, and so I was, taking in every sight I could. But we found this really good Italian restaurant there. We had my birthday dinner there.
Oh, very nice.
There you go.
It was great.
What'd you have?
I had a baked salmon with fresh veggies and some potatoes, and had some excellent chocolate cake for dessert.
With a candle? Did they bring?
No, I didn't have a candle.
They didn't bring the cake to the table and embarrass you singing happy birthday.
They should have sang,
or not even the alternative birthday song.
Which one is that?
Well, you know, when the restaurants make up their own birthday song.
Yes,
happy birthday to you, happy birthday, happy.
Remember when you would be in a restaurant and all of a sudden you start hearing. When the servers are calling each other and they all run over to a table and
to
go into the big happy birthday song.
Yeah, that's embarrassing.
But I couldn't resist sending you, Dean, a text and a picture from a wonderful candy store and ice cream store where we were, because I saw these old-fashioned pop bottles, and it just reminded me of that Andy Griffith scene.
Yeah, out in front of Wally's
on the porch.
Station.
Yep. I think I'll go get me a bottle of pop.
That's exactly what he texted me. Exactly those words. And he sent me a picture of the bottles of pop.
I couldn't resist.
I was like, wow, the vacation has hit a lull. Here.
I couldn't resist.
He just missed you.
Yeah, I'm on vacation. I'm going to send Dean a picture of bottles of pop.
I think it was called Frosty Soda or something like that.
Yeah,
and those would be the kind that Wally would serve out of that cooler there in front of the gas station.
Right. Put a nickel in or something.
Yeah.
Like that.
A nickel, you know, it's 7 cents now.
These bottles of pop that you sent me are like those fancy schmancy ones when you go to a store now and it's like $5 a bottle.
Yeah. Right.
Organic.
And there's 186 grams of sugar in them,
right.
Too.
Organic.
Where are they good?
Made with hemp. Shwani had a hemp-filled birthday.
I didn't get anywhere close to it.
Yeah. So good, you had a nice
time. I had a great time, yes.
Nice.
Yep.
Well, you were missed here last week.
Well, thank you.
Not by me, but
I didn't think that would
be. I missed you, Swanee.
Most others did.
Thanks to Rob LaFrenz for filling in.
Oh, he did a fine
Rob job. Does a great job.
Now, Rob, he did a fine job, but it's not the same without you.
Well,
you were missed.
Thank you.
I'm not
thank
setting you up for a joke. We missed you.
No, you are setting me up. It will happen later in the show.
I'm lying so much.
See there, Jack? You know this. You've been here now long enough.
I'm a savvy vet now.
A savvy vet.
A savvy vet.
That's going to be his new nickname. We're dropping Jack Hammer from now on. You are a savvy vet.
Mm-hmm. There we go.
Oh. Well, anywho, welcome back. All you bike riders out there, be careful. I rode my bicycle last week.
You did?
I hadn't been on a bike in a long time. So, I got my bike all rehabbed, tuned up and checked the tires and, the whole deal. So it's in perfect operating condition now. And I went for a nice bike ride.
You know, this is a perfect opportunity for us to do the show.
On bikes?
Bike the drive. Do the show along Bike the Drive.
Or we could do it on a three-person bike.
Yeah. Hey, there you
now
go.
You're talking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What if we got like a motorcycle with? Oh no, motorcycles can't. Nothing motorized can be on
no.
Bike to drive.
No, mm-hmm. Nope.
Because I was thinking about one of those motorcycles with the sidecars.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah,
and the three of us could sit in one sidecar,
wave to everybody driving.
A little awkward, but
you'll figure it out.
I would love to do that.
Well,
it was fun being back out on the bike. It's fun. It's fun. It's peaceful. I get why people drag their bikes down here to Lakeshore Drive to be on DeSable Lakeshore Drive when it's quiet. Everyone has commented on that when they're doing the bike the drive, how incredibly quiet it is without any motor vehicles out there. You know, that's it makes a big, big difference.
Yeah, completely different. You can hear the water.
Yeah, but it's just very peaceful. When I was doing my bike ride, it's peaceful. I can peek into people's houses a lot easier than I normally do.
Yeah, we had a report of that. Police are looking for someone on a bicycle.
Hey, close your drapes if you don't want me to look inside.
It's a great point.
Not my fault if you've got nice stuff in your house that I might want. And each time, I remember this from the last time I rode my bike. First thing I think of, I hop off the bike, you feel all energetic. So, it's a pretty good workout. It's a good cardio workout when you're on the bike. But I hop off the bike going, oh, I got to get a bigger seat.
Yeah.
And why is that?
It's not so comfortable.
Why is that?
It's not so comfortable down there.
The seats are made like so small.
Yeah.
There's
not enough padding. Yeah.
Yeah. If you're a racer, if you're in the Tour de France or something, then I suppose you want an aerodynamic, narrow seat. But when you're a hefty XL big boy like I am. You want as much padding down there as you can possibly get.
You're not racing. You're just trying to enjoy your time.
I'm just trying to not get chafed.
Yeah. Aren't we all?
That's my... That
you should buy one of those big cushions that you can buy for your car, when the seat wears out.
It's like a beaded seat
just,
cushion.
Get a coat hanger and tie it on there.
Oh, that sounds incredibly comfortable. Yeah, that sounds perfect. I may go get one of those doggy beds.
There you go.
And put it on the thing that I have. Chicago's very own WGN. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, moms and dads, kids of all ages, gather around the radio. and prepare to enjoy what we call the far-flung forecast, which I handled last week, by the way, Schwann.
Okay, great. What did you do?
I don't remember.
Okay.
Jack, do you remember?
It was that song. What was the song?
Oh, Bohemian
Rhapsody.
That's
right, yeah.
It was the history of Bohemian Rhapsody.
Oh, the Queen song?
It was the anniversary of it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
That's why Eli's here. He remembers things.
I got you.
Somebody has to pay attention to what's going on.
Bohemian Rhapsody, part of our DJ days, right, Dean?
Right. Yeah, man. Can you do the Fandango? Yeah. All right. Now back into regular F-cubed mode, ladies and gentlemen. Here is Dave Schwann.
And thank you very much, Uncle Dean. Get out. Big compass, protractor, yeah, and newfangled device, because we're going across the Atlantic all the way to Gdansk, Poland.
Gdansk, Poland.
Yeah. Which is a port city in northern Poland. It has been so for about 800 years or so. It's been a trading port there since the Middle Ages, right on up through the 19th and 20th centuries. And Gdansk, Poland, was the location of a strike among shipyard workers back in around 1980. They were striking for, you know, demands of better rights, better wages, especially because of an economic crisis, right, that Poland, which was communist at the time, raised the price of food and other goods, but reduced the growth of wages. And some people stood up for this, among them one man by the name of Lech Wałęsa, who led the striking workers at the shipyard there. And on August 31st, 1980, 45 years ago today, he and representatives of the communist government signed an agreement to follow the demands of the shipyard workers. This led to the Solidarity Movement and ultimately led to the downfall of the Eastern Bloc countries and ultimately the Soviet Union. Lech Wałęsa was awarded the 1983 Nobel Peace Prize. He became the first president of Poland ever to be elected by a popular vote. And this fall, he's on a tour of the U.S. to talk about all of this. He'll be in Chicago in October to discuss this.
He was in Chicago shortly after this, wasn't he?
Yes, he was. As a matter of fact, he may still have some relatives that lived here in Chicago. Many years ago, I talked with a second cousin or something like that,
yeah,
interviewed that person. But it was 45 years ago today.
I remember what a big deal it was when he came here. Chicago,
yes.
Chicago being the second largest Polish population outside of Warsaw. Obviously, Polish people here, well, everybody, freedom-loving people here, applauded, when he came here. He was, greeted like royalty.
That's right. And not coinciding with that, at the same time, we had Pope John Paul II,
right,
who was from Krakow, Poland.
Yep.
So it was 45 years ago today that was Solidarity was formed, and the beginning of the end, you might say, of communist domination. And Gdansk, Poland, which is 7 hours ahead of us, it's 4:37 in the afternoon there now. Sunny skies and 68 degrees.
Nice. Nice that there's just peace all over the world since then, too.
Yeah. Wow. Boy.
How the times have changed.
Yes. Yeah. I would imagine that, during his tour here and the talks that he's going to give, that he certainly will have something to say about, the current relations between Ukraine and Russia and what's going on now as opposed to 35, 40 years ago.
Yeah, because Poland is, in possible jeopardy.
There was talked about that might be next, yes.
Could be the next one to go, yeah. All right, well, very nice. Very nice.
Back in the saddle.
Yeah. I couldn't hold a candle to yours. Mine last week, not even close to
Well, when you say it was on although Bohemian Rhapsody.
Although I did have audio. Mine was a multimedia presentation.
Oh, good. Okay.
I don't want to say yours was kind of flat, but mine was just fully. It is 9:41. This is going to be the best day ever. try to make this the best day of your life with good health. That's what our Week in Health segment is about. Joining us, as always, Dr. Santina Wheat, Program Director, McGaw Northwestern Family Medicine Residency at Delner Hospital. Dr. Wheat, good morning and welcome in.
Good morning. Thanks for having me today.
So tomorrow, September 1st, which I can't believe it is, begins Prostate Cancer Awareness Month. What do we guys need to know about prostate cancer awareness?
So prostate cancer is something that's really important to be thinking about. Unfortunately, it is a very, very common cancer for men. But the good news about prostate cancer is if we are able to find it and find it before it spreads, then the survival rate is actually really good. So it is something that you should be willing to talk to your doctor about and not be embarrassed about, but really be thinking about screening, particularly as you're getting older, older than 50s, if you're not having symptoms, but really just something that you have to be thinking about. If you wake up in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom, if it feels weird to go to the bathroom, then it's just a conversation you should be having with us.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, what are the, you know, what are signs that there may be trouble?
Yeah, so the biggest ones that I think about of your prostate being even large, which is some of the things we think about if there is a cancer, are, like I said, going to the bathroom a lot at nighttime, feeling like you can't empty when you're urinating, and feeling like you're just going more frequently. So all things that are just making it harder to go to the bathroom.
And you say if it's found early enough that, you know, you almost always have a great result. What are the treatments for this? Is it the usual when someone finds they have a cancer diagnosis of chemo, radiation? How is prostate cancer treated?
It's a great question. It can be chemo or radiation, depending on the type of cancer that you have. Prostate cancer can be a hormone-driven cancer, and so sometimes there's medications to block the hormone, so sometimes it's an injection or even a pill that you might take. And then it does sometimes involve surgery as well, of just actually removing the cancer from your prostate. So it's really variable.
Yeah, I've known guys that have been treated surgically for prostate cancer. And back in the old days, it was somewhat radical surgery, but now it's often done robotically, isn't it, where there are minimal incisions and they're able to do things surgically that are far less invasive for the patient, right?
That is exactly right. And some of the things that we're seeing with the robotic surgeries is it's so much more precise. And so they're able to just really get after the area that needs to be taken and not take so much of the prostate, particularly, as we said before, when it's found early.
So, this is the cancer that took Ryan Sandberg of the Cubs fame from us. Sometimes it is not successful. But either way, guys, if you're feeling any of the symptoms that Dr. Wheat talked about, get to see your physicians right away so you can be treated, right?
Absolutely. And if you have family history or you're worried in any way, talk to us about screening too. Sometimes we can find it before their symptoms, which is the best case scenario.
Okay. All right. Are the symptoms different than enlarged prostate? I know a lot of older guys, sometimes get that. And some of the symptoms that you talked about have been described to them as being enlarged prostate. That's different than prostate cancer, right?
It is, and the symptoms that I just described can be some of them, but also you might see typical cancer symptoms like losing weight or feeling like you're not as hungry or more tired than you were. Sometimes we see those cancer symptoms too. And as I mentioned, sometimes the cancer's there and there are no symptoms at all, which is why sometimes we do screening just to see if we can catch it before it starts to spread and have other signs.
Okay. Wanted to this week also just talk a little about COVID-19 vaccine recommendations. There's definitely an upsurge of COVID all around the United States and here in the state of Illinois, recommendations, in addition to all the controversy that came out this week about the CDC, also some recommendations came out about what people should be doing vaccine-wise. I don't think there's been a week since we've been doing this health segment where we don't get a half a dozen calls of people asking about, you know, when they should take their COVID vaccine. So what do you know about these recommendations, and what are you recommending to your patients?
So I'm always going to start by saying, talk to your doctor. We really want to talk to you about what makes sense. So the recommendations that came out this year from the CDC look different than they had in the past, whereas they are now saying that everyone over 65 should be getting this vaccine, and then everyone under 65, it really is depending on if you have high-risk conditions. Now, if you go to the CDC website and look at what those high-risk conditions are, the list is actually quite long. And the reason that this is a little bit challenging this year is because there are different recommendations for some of the professional societies and the CDC. But also, the challenge that we're going to be facing is how you actually get the vaccine. So I was looking last night for my own family. I do plan to get vaccines for my family, and everybody in my household is under 65, so have to have an additional risk. And I was looking at the pharmacy, which is the most frequent way people got vaccines last year, and there were options to say, do you have an eligible condition, and then links you to them. So it'll just be a little bit more difficult this year if you are somebody that wants to get the vaccine.
Okay.
But I will be recommending it for most of my patients. So.
All right. Yeah, okay. All right. So, I mean, if anybody has questions about that, we're going to go to the phone lines in a second, 312-981-7200. While we're on this subject, we talked about this, I think, last week. Somebody asked, should I get my flu shot? We are in that season right now, right, where you should get your flu shot as well.
Yes, I usually start saying, let's get our flu shots in about September. And as you mentioned, that starts tomorrow. So it is about the time to start scheduling. And it is reasonable to get the two vaccines together if you're going to be getting them, to get the flu shot and the COVID vaccine together, if that makes sense for you and your family.
Yeah, I mean, there's it is a lot more confusing now with all the controversy that we're hearing from the CDC, from Washington, et cetera. Everyone really needs to make their own decisions on this. And I, like you, I think I choose to protect myself. You know, I want to get all caught up with all my vaccines. So I'll be going to, I always think it's funny when you go to the grocery store to do your grocery shopping, and then you wind up getting a vaccination for something.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Come for the coleslaw, stay for the vaccination, as I say. 312-981-7200. On the subject of the robotic prostate surgery, the 773 area code, Dr. Wheat says, I just had robotic prostate vance removal at Northwestern this past Tuesday. Thank you to everyone from my urologist to my phlebotomist, all the hospital people I encountered, pre-op professionals, post-op hospital staff, but especially to my physician surgeon. So that sounds nice that it turned out right. But that robotic prostate vance removal, that's what you were talking about with the more precise surgery?
Yes, absolutely. And I just want to say thank you for saying a shout out to your entire team. It is such a team that has to come together to do all of those things.
All right, let's take a break and we'll come right back and go right to the phones for your calls and texts, 312-981-7200. Chicago's very own WGN. Flora is in Elgin. And you are on WGN with Dr. Santina Wheat. Hi, Flora.
Hi there. I'm 78. I'll be 79 in just a couple of weeks. Last year, I was told I got the flu and COVID too soon. So what month? I mean, like, I thought that early September was okay.
You mean you got your vaccinations too early?
Yeah, I got my flu and my COVID, and I was told I got it too soon. I wound up in the hospital in January, December.
I'm asking you, did I get my flu and COVID shots too early?
Correct.
Okay, Dr. Wheat?
Yeah, hi, Flora. That's a great question and something that I do hear a lot. This is a tricky one. I think that the best time to get the vaccine is when it's available and when you can get the vaccine. And it's important to know that it takes a few weeks for the vaccines to actually be effective. So for folks who are going to be traveling throughout cold and flu season, I absolutely recommend that they get it earlier. But if you're not going to be around people for a little while, then sometimes people will wait until early October. But I always worry that there might be supply issues and we might not be able to get vaccines. So I still think whenever you can get your vaccine, it's a good time. I will say last season, we did see a lot of people still get the flu, even if they had the vaccine. So it might not have had anything to do with timing and just the vaccine that we had available last season.
Flora, good luck to you. Thank you for your call. 630 area code asks, please ask Dr. Wheat if she knows if there's any evidence that vitamins are good for your eyesight. Is that true?
Oh, that's a great question. There are some recommendations about being careful for, I've heard of ones like vitamin A for different mucous membranes and other things. And so that is the one that I hear most often as a nutrient that helps maintain healthy eyesight. But in general, we're always going to recommend that you try to get as many vitamins as possible, particularly within your diet, so that you are healthy everywhere, and that includes for your eyesight.
Yeah, good.
But vitamin A is the one I think of the most.
Good multivitamin. Never hurt anyone. Dr. Santina Wheat, Program Director, McGaw, Northwestern Family Medicine Residency at Delner. Have a great holiday weekend and a great week to come, Dr. Wheat. Thank you.
Thank you. You too. Have a good one. We're
on to see. I wonder how many times I've seen the movie Wizard of Oz. I've been watching it since I was a little kid, right? Haven't we all? Swanee, I know you have.
Oh, yeah. And you know what I remember, of course, is that it was sometime around Easter or early spring was that CBS or NBC would show the movie on a Sunday evening.
Oh, it was a big deal.
It was a huge deal, and everybody talked about it at school the next day.
Yeah. Jack, is that too far beyond your generation?
I think I saw it once.
You like it?
I think so. I don't think I hated it or anything.
I see you being a big fan of the flying monkeys.
Yeah, I mean, that's cool.
I see him being a Wicked Witch of the West.
Me?
You know they're showing The Wizard of Oz at the Sphere in Las Vegas.
That would be fun to see.
It just opened the other day. Imagine this. 360 degrees around, projected around you, above you, everywhere.
Wow.
The Wizard of Oz. Plus, they've added in a lot of AI enhancements, like during the tornado scene, the beginning of that puts Dorothy, spoiler alert, after 70 years, spoiler alert, There's a tornado scene that puts Dorothy in the Land of Oz. During that scene, they put like high velocity fans on, so you actually feel,
oh wow,
the winds and stuff is blowing around all over the place. During the flying monkey scene, I don't want to give away too much of, people are going to go see it. But they do some amazing things that are not on the screen, that are happening inside the sphere. I'll just say that. And it sounds super cool, and I can't wait. I got to find some time to go and see it, because I think it would be so cool.
How long is it going to be there?
Quite a while. I want to say till March.
Oh, wow. Okay. So yeah. It's not just a few weeks then.
No, it's till March. They're showing it several times a day. Now, they did cut about 20 minutes out of the movie. I don't know what they cut out exactly, but the producers are saying that, you know, they made some adjustments in the film to accommodate, you know, the full experience of seeing it on the sphere, or seeing it all around you. I mean, think about this. This is like going to an IMAX theater, except the screen is not only in front of you, it's on both sides of you, it's above you, it's everywhere. It sounds super cool to me. Can't wait.
That seems like the way to watch it, you know?
Yeah.
With all the effects and whatnot.
I think it would be amazing.
How about this? In 4 years, this movie is going to be 90 years old.
Isn't that amazing?
Released in August of 1939.
That's amazing.
Wow.
And I think it still holds up.
Oh, sure. Yes. I mean, there are wonderful. It's a wonderful story.
Some parts that are a little corny, you know, like some of the special effects are, you know, it was 1939.
It's 1939.
Right?
Yeah.
But that's the thing, is it's the story. You know, the ultimate, you know, searching for home. There's no place like home.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yep.
So.
Yep. And I'm, you know, a memory serves. Frank Baum, who wrote the story, lived here in Chicago.
Okay. Can you imagine? I mean, I'm sure that, like, none of the people involved in this movie, the actors, the dancers, the munchkins, the directors, the camera people, everybody who was connected with making this movie 90 years ago, essentially, could have never in a million years imagined that the movie would be shown in a venue like this. You know, with these kind of special effects. I mean, it was a big deal when, here's another 90-year-old spoiler alert, there's a point in the movie where it goes from black and white to color. That was a big deal back then.
I think the only other color movie in true color was Gone with the Wind at that time.
Yeah, from the 1930s.
That was a full color movie.
Yeah, and full. But, I mean, it was made even more dramatic from when Dorothy was in Kansas, the tornado comes, and now she's in the Land of Oz where everything is in color. It was mind-blowing.
Yeah.
You know, to see it in color.
And, you know, we saw Wicked, the movie.
Yeah.
And it was unbelievable in 3D. Just unbelievable. But
the movie Wicked you're talking
about. Yeah, the movie Wicked, you know, was unbelievable. But I was watching that movie and I'm thinking, these sets are very much influenced by the original film.
Oh, absolutely.
You know?
I mean, the Wicked is based on, you know, where the Wicked Witches came from.
That's right.
It's based on, it's essentially a prequel. For Wizard of Oz. Which that's going to be coming out, part two of Wicked. That's going to be coming out Thanksgiving weekend.
Yeah, just a reminder there. I see how current I can be.
You are so hip.
Trendy.
Talking about the Wizard of Oz. You are cutting edge. Shawnee's going to set up a booth at Riot Fest. People can talk about the Wizard of Oz with him. I wonder how much tickets are for this.
We were looking at this actually earlier this week on John Landecker's show. It's about $120
to go see.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I would still go.
For an experience like that?
Yeah.
Yeah, I probably would.
Let's all go together.
Okay. Sounds like a boys' trip.
Let's make it a field trip.
Okay. Sounds good to me. Let's do it.
Yeah, we'll all stay in one room.
Shawnee, that's how we bond.
Nope.
What's the movie that Zach Galifianakis?
The Hangover.
Nope.
The Hangover. This is gonna be like a take on The Hangover where the three of us go to Vegas
to see, to the, see the Wizard of Oz.
To see the Wizard of Oz. Shawnee gets drunk and gets kidnapped and taken to the desert.
There's a baby and a tiger involved.
Somebody get Mike Tyson on the phone, see if he wants to join us.
You're not in Kansas anymore.
That is for sure. If you go on the web, you can, you know, just check it out to get more info on it. But I'm serious about going. I do want to go and see it, and I think it'd be cool. What else do we got going on? there, you've been reporting in your news, Schwani, and I'm seeing bulletins coming over all morning long about the possibility of the National Guard coming to Chicago.
Yes.
And I don't want to get into a whole big political thing here at all, but this is starting to get real in Chicago. I mean, where people are genuinely concerned about the National Guard coming in, however you feel about it. But Mayor Johnson signed a proclamation yesterday. Governor Pritzker has been extremely vocal about the whole thing. But something very interesting, because Schwani was on vacation last week for his birthday in Virginia, right near our nation's capital. And you went to the National Mall, you said, you were telling
yes.
me before the show,
yes.
right?
Yes, I did.
And you've been there before.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Except this time, big difference there, you were telling me.
We were reporting the fact that, you know, President Trump called in the National Guard with some, you know, discussion and some disagreement among people in that area concerning it. But when I got into the National Mall, taking their metro system, you know, is the their subway line. It's like our CTA.
Except it's nice and clean.
It's a very, very good system.
Right.
And there is a stop that's called the Smithsonian that puts you right at the Smithsonian Institution, one of the older buildings of part of that museum. But it's in the middle of the National Mall. You're, you know, very, very close to the Washington Monument.
Yeah, it's all walking distance.
All within walking distance.
It's a good central spot to everything.
But from the time I got off the train to the time I left to go back into Virginia, yes, there were National Guard members walking all over the mall. I went up to the Lincoln Memorial. They're at the top of the memorial. And walking around.
Armed,
but
armed.
No, they were not. They were not armed. And also very friendly and receptive to people. It was a Saturday, so you had a lot of families there, a lot of children, visitors from everywhere, as you would expect to see in Washington. But they were very friendly and talkative and helping people, you know, if they needed directions somewhere also. But yes, they were there. They were very much a presence.
Yeah, but the visual presence is very noticeable, right? That's what you're telling me.
Yeah, yeah.
Before we went,
and
on.
I think also, you know, this would have been just in the last few days. I was there Saturday a week ago, but during this past week, some of them were armed. You know, as a later order perhaps came down.
Yeah.
And they would be armed. But the word here is that the people in City Hall and people in Mayor Johnson's administration is kind of anticipating a tentative arrival by Friday.
Yeah. Which is ironic, I guess, because the Mexican Independence Day parade is next weekend also at the same time. And there are great concerns by a lot of community groups that the timing on this could be so, that people may not go to the parade this year because they don't want to be part of anything may happen this year. So it's going to be an interesting week.
Is the parade Saturday?
I believe the parade is, I'm not sure if it's Saturday or Sunday.
Okay.
I'm not sure, but just the idea of that happening I don't want to get into discussion if it's right or wrong or, whatever. That's not what we do on this show, but it's different, you know, lifelong Chicagoan, never thought I would see that in the streets of Chicago ever.
And some of the residents in D.C. proper were interviewed about this. Some did not like it, but then others did. That, right. You know, they thought this would be beneficial for a particular neighborhood or community that they lived in.
Yeah.
And as you know, Washington, D.C. itself has a very wide variety of residents there. You know, there are poorer areas, but then there are some very nice areas also.
Sure. Yeah, very affluent.
Very affluent, yeah.
All the politicians and their staffs and so forth live.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, you know, we'll just keep an eye on what's going on. And, yeah, we'll leave it at that. Everyone, you know, please have their, make up your own minds on this whole thing. Shall we move off onto another conversation?
Certainly.
Like the Weekend Theater, which is coming up in just a moment. Brand new production has just opened at the Marriott Lincolnshire Theater, Catch Me If You Can, which is based on the first novel and then motion picture, and also a huge savings with a special promotion coming up from the League of Chicago Theaters that we'll tell you about. If you love Chicago theater, stick around next.
WGN. Dean Richards, Sunday morning, Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
Show just opened at Chicago's longest running musical theater, the Marriott Theater in Lincolnshire. It is Catch Me If You Can, based on the first novel by Frank Abagnale, the world's most charming con artist, and then a motion picture that starred Leonardo DiCaprio and Tom Hanks. Now it's been turned into a musical, this true story really about chasing your dreams. And taking on the role of Frank Abagnale is J.J. Neiman, who is, this is who we're hearing in the background. And J.J. joins us on our phone line right now. J.J., welcome to WGN. Hello.
Hi, thank you for having me.
It's a real pleasure to have you here with us. And how are things going so far? I know you're just getting up and running with Catch Me If You Can up in, yes, in Lincolnshire. Are things going well so far?
Yes, it's been a fast and furious process. We had basically 10 days to stage the whole show. And then we did 4 days of tech rehearsals. And then we started audience performances on Wednesday, and I've been performing all week, and then we're making changes every day, notes every day, and then we officially open on Wednesday for press and reviews and all of that.
Yeah, it's got to be pretty exciting for you. I believe this is your first time at the Marriott in Lincolnshire, right?
It is. I've never worked here before or in the Chicago area, so it's been a lot of fun.
What's it like for you to... been known in so many big shows, including Hamilton, and I mean the list goes on. To be in an in the round setting like this for a show like this, is that a little more challenging?
Oh, for sure. Yes. I mean, every show has its own challenges. You know, Hamilton has the turntable. Back to the Future, we had flying cars. You know what I mean? Every show has different challenges, but the round is very, it's a whole new experience. And to kind of, they call it Marriotting. They're like, make sure you Marriott, which means rotate to each section when you're, you know, delivering a monologue or singing a part of your song and kind of finding a way to naturally make it look as an actor. Like you need to move around in the space and tell, you know, to make sure each side gets the information. It's cool. It's very cool.
Yeah, to visually engage, right, with audiences all over the place. And the proximity of the audience to the actors really is not that far. I mean, they're with, literally within arm's distance in some cases.
Yes, there's no, a lot of times performing on proscenium stages, like on Broadway, you kind of can visually blur out the audience and kind of just, you know, it looks just like a sea and a wash. But in this theater, especially my character delivers a lot of his lines kind of breaking the fourth wall. So it works really well for the space, but it also is very vulnerable because you're like, okay, I gotta like really engage with the people and I can see them so clearly right in front of me. Yeah.
Yeah. So talk to us a little about Catch Me If You Can. I remember when the movie came out, I interviewed Leonardo DiCaprio and Tom Hanks and the real Frank Abagnale about this incredible true story. Tell everybody what this is about.
Yeah, I mean, it's really a story about a kid who is flying by the seat of his pants and runs away from home. And he essentially finds his way into all of these cons. You know, he just lies his way through life. He becomes a Pan Am, you know, a fake Pan Am co-pilot and flies all over the world with that. And then he decides to become, he moves around because he is being chased by the FBI. He's passing all of these bad checks, forged checks. He has tons of fake IDs that he's created, made his own printing press to produce his own checks. So he's operating under all these different names. And then he kind of is on the run. He becomes a doctor for a little bit of time at a hospital in Atlanta. He meets a girl who he, you know, falls in love with. And that's kind of where it tumbles down because he is trying to, you know, manage being this person and wanting to be this person with her and, you know, be a part of her family and marry this girl. But then he's also like, well, I've created this whole lie. Like, she doesn't even know his real last name. So it's like he has this whole lie and then, you know, has to figure out how to get himself out of it. So it's really a complex story, but it has a lot of heart and a lot of interesting messages and life lessons for sure.
Yeah. The movie and, the original book, the fact that this is a true story is quite incredible, but it still was just incredibly entertaining. And now you're adding on the music and the dancing. That's got to be super fun for all of you, right?
Oh, yeah. And, like, the music is super 60s inspired. It's written by the same writers who wrote Hairspray and Smash, the TV show, and a lot of, like, big hit songs. I actually have worked with them both. I worked with them on Smash on the, you know, workshops for the Broadway production recently in New York. So the writers of the show were really excited that I was, you know, taking on this role. And so the music's awesome. The choreography and direction is amazing. The cast is awesome. And it's cool. We've implemented these like video wall design because Frank Jr., he's a kid, you know, he starts the show as a 17-year-old that runs away and he has this, you know, comic book fantasy. Everything feels like a game to him. Like, he doesn't understand how high the stakes really are at the beginning. And so a lot of the elements of the video design, that's a ring above our stage, shows where we are in space and time, but also through almost like a comic book aesthetic and a 60s mod aesthetic. It's really, really cool. The designers really did their thing with this one, for sure.
It's got to be kind of exciting for you. I mean, so much of your work has been mostly in New York, and I imagine also in roles in L.A. as well. I mean, this is just a complete a different break. Is this almost like a summer vacation for a Broadway actor?
You know what? I mean, I'm staying at the resort, so it is a nice, it is like, you know, I'm at the Marriott Lincolnshire. It's a cool little break. Also, it's nice to be close to a city still and so much, you know, hustle and bustle, but also be in a suburb area coming from a city. It's kind of relaxing to my nervous system.
Yeah.
But it also is really cool. You know, in New York, a lot of what I've done is I've done a lot of ensemble work. I've swung. I've been in the ensemble. I've also understudied. I, you know, did a bunch of performances over a year and a half as Marty McFly and George McFly in Back to the Future. But I haven't gotten to sink my teeth into a lead role this big and, like, really take ownership of it. So it's been a really cool and special opportunity to do that and, like, really feel super supported by the people I'm around. So, yeah, it's been awesome.
I can't wait to see it. Catch Me If You Can will be it's in previews now, but will officially open September 3rd, and it'll run through October the 19th at the Marriott Theater in Lincolnshire. You can get tickets by calling the box office, 847-634-0200, or you can go to marriotttheater.com to get more information. JJ, I hope you have a great time, and look forward to meeting you in person. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
JJ Neiman, Catch Me If You Can at the Marriott.
Dean Richards, Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
After 11 o'clock, the children of comedy legend Bob Newhart. Bob is going to be honored with a street naming in Chicago next week, next Friday, just outside of the building that posed as Bob's home with Suzanne Plachette, Emily, in the Bob Newhart Show, which is the 5800 block of North Sheridan Road. It's going to be renamed for Bob. His children will be at the dedication. I will be at the dedication and speaking at it. So there are, you know, some big doings to honor Bob Newhart. And two of Bob's three children join us in our next half hour to talk about it. In the meantime, we continue with the Week in Theater, and, you know, I know you're always looking for ways to get to see some quality theater in Chicago, but save some money at the same time, and that's why Tickets for a 20 has returned to a variety of theaters, thanks to the League of Chicago Theaters and their Hot Ticks program. It's going to be going on for a couple of weeks. Alexis Davis is the director of marketing for the League of Chicago Theaters. Alexis, thanks for joining us. Good morning.
Good morning, Dean. Thank you so much for having me this morning.
Oh, it's my pleasure. So tell everybody what Tickets for a 20 is.
Yes, so Hot Ticks, which is under our League of Chicago Theaters umbrella, is bringing back our special limited time only promotion called Tickets for a 20, which is running now until Sunday, September 14th, while supplies last. We offer $20 tickets or less to over 30 shows in advance. So we are having our promo code 20 at checkout to unlock $20 tickets for those participating performances.
So if you go to hottix.org, HOTTIX.org, it'll show you which shows are available and what the prices are. But this is a tremendous savings for people who would like to take in some theater. But, you know, some tickets can sometimes be a little costly. So this is a great opportunity, right?
Correct. So biggest example is Teatro Zenzani, which is a dazzling spectacle of circus, comedy, and music. It's usually over $80 to attend, and we actually have tickets for $20, which is an absolute steal. For that. And then we also have different shows that are less than $20, which A New Brain, Improvised Jane Austen, and White Rabbit, Red Rabbit. So yeah, there are so many different options you can choose from.
We'll go down the list in a second, but I want to go back to Teatro Zenzani for a second, because in addition to this being comedy and music and circus arts, acrobatics, etc., It's also a dinner show. It's a multi-course dinner show as well.
For 20, yeah.
$20? For are you kidding
$20.
Me? You can't beat that.
Right.
Yeah.
Can't beat that at all. And Teatro Zanzani is something that you don't want to miss. We had the opportunity to have our annual gala there this past August, and we got a show.
Yeah.
And also some great bites. So.
Right, right. Yeah, I've seen the show several times. Every time that I've seen it, it's been different. Really fun. I spent a New Year's Eve there, one performance. And it was like one of the most fun New Year's Eves.
I'm sure
that I've ever been to. So you can go to hottix.org to get more information. Now, you know, generally you can find some pretty good discount tickets for lots of shows, a huge variety of shows, when you go to HotTix, right?
Yes, we on a daily basis offer discounted tickets from our largest to our smallest theaters. And so we have over 150 shows available on a daily basis with our inventory through HotTix. So if you can't miss, if you end up missing tickets for a 20, you can always visit HotTix.org and find a ticket to your favorite show.
Yeah, this is, a fantastic program because the League of Chicago Theaters is in touch with the producers, with the different venues around the Chicago area, and they would rather sell a seat which has not been sold at a discount price than not sell it at all. So there are some great opportunities to be had 365 days a year on this.
You are absolutely right, Dean. And this is our sixth year of Tickets for a 20, so we are super excited for that. We have already sold out a number of shows, and we're hoping to continue to sell out more, but we hope that folks can get those tickets before everything sells out.
Yeah, of course, of course. Now, what are you recommending? What's out there right now that the league wants you to go see?
So Catch Me If You Can is at the Marriott Theater in Lincolnshire.
Yeah, we
so
just,
if you want to pop out to
that.
The suburbs,
yeah.
And get that experience of the musical adaptation of the hit film and true story of Frank Abagnale Jr. as a airline pilot and a lawyer and a doctor, you can go out to Lincolnshire at Marriott Theater and catch Me If You Can.
Yeah, we just had J.J. Neiman on right before you. Talking,
oh, wow.
Yeah, talking about the show and telling us a little about that. What else besides Catch Me If You Can? We know there's all the big theater district shows that are downtown, but also some of the neighborhood theaters that are participating in this as well, correct?
Yes. So we have a new brain. I mentioned that earlier with Pride Arts that's at the center on Halsted. And that is a musical about a composer who faces a medical emergency while he's reluctantly writing songs for a children's TV show and faces a lot of different things in this world about his hospital stay, as well as a frog character from his show that he's writing for the children's TV show. And so that musical explores a lot of different themes, but mostly about time, life, love, and the healing power of art.
Yeah, are the Goodman and Steppenwolf, do they tickets for their shows pop up on HotTix once in a while?
They do. We actually have a few tickets left for Ashland Avenue at Goodman, it did sell out. And then thankfully, Goodman gave us some more tickets for our Tickets for a 20. And then we also have Mr. Wolf with Steppenwolf. So that's going to be super exciting as well.
Okay. And what about the Broadway and Chicago shows? Those are the big shows in the downtown.
Those are the big shows.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Kent, if you want to visit hottix.org, I can let you know if there's some more on Broadway and Chicago. I know MJ is running right now. We don't currently have any tickets right now for MJ for tickets 4/20, but we do have discounted tickets for MJ on Hot Ticks.
Okay, yeah. So it's worth, if you're a theater goer, it's definitely worth going to hottix.org, HOTTIX, hottix.org, and just scout around a little bit, see what's out there, see what's available. It changes all the time. So,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, you know, if you're a theater goer, see what's on there that pleases you. You can purchase your tickets right online. And are there still places that you can go to purchase tickets, or is this all done strictly online now?
We are right now strictly online, and we are taking appointments, though, for folks who do want to do an in-person visit to our offices. Okay. If you call us at our offices, we have our team there that can sell tickets and walk you through the process. And I can give you that number right now.
Sure.
Our Hot Ticks number is 312-977-9483. And you can set an appointment with us to get your tickets.
Alexis Davis, League of Chicago Theaters Director of Marketing. Appreciate you joining us today.
Dean Richards, Sunday Morning, Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
Opening sequence from the Bob Newhart Show, first sitcom back in the early 70s with those great Chicago street scenes of, you know, Bob catching the L, headed up to his apartment. All the directions didn't make any sense to anybody that actually knew the city of Chicago. That's something that also amused Bob, that he and I talked about that so many times through the years. But it's such a part of television legend, that opening of the Bob Newhart Show with Suzanne Pleshette, and them winding up in their actual apartment, which was the building that was set on, that actually in real life was on North Sheridan Road in Chicago. And that stretch of Sheridan Road this coming Friday is going to be renamed Bob Newhart Way by the city of Chicago. A great honor for a great Chicagoan, someone who never forgot where he was from, came to Chicago often. St. Ignatius, Loyola, just, you know, always remained part of the city of Chicago. So the fact that that stretch of Sheridan Road, where that building is, that we saw at the beginning of the Bob Newhart Show every week, going to be renamed for Bob is quite special. Now, this is going to be this coming Friday morning at 11 o'clock. There's going to be an unveiling of the street signs, and there'll be many, many speakers, including myself, as a part of it. So, you know, if you're free, available to come by and watch the unveiling of the street sign, that'd be great. We're going to have our WGN-TV cameras there as well and show it to you on the news, of course. But also, who will be in attendance, Bob Newhart's kids will be there as well. And that includes Tim Newhart and Courtney Newhart Albertini, Bob's son and daughter, who will also be in attendance. And they join us on our phone lines right now. Tim and Courtney, welcome. Nice to have you with us today.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Tim,
good morning. Hi, yeah, thank you for having us.
Yeah, Tim, it's great to talk to both of you again. We met at your dad's memorial in Los Angeles. Earlier this year, and it was great and sweet and thoughtful. And it's got to be kind of a thrill, I would think, for all three of you. Another sibling whose name I am not seeing right here in front of me right now, but the three of you are all going to be there on Friday. Tim, talk to me a little bit about how you feel about this great honor for your dad.
Well, first off, it's Jennifer is the other sibling, and she'll be there as well. I guess she couldn't make it this morning, or her voice is off a little bit. Honestly, it's a little bittersweet. It was Dad's birthday last year was really hard. He would have been 95, and this Friday he would have been 96. And so this is just a great way of just commemorating Dad. You know, he loved Chicago. I mean, you know, he had to work in L.A., but, you know, if the Cubs were in town, he almost never missed a Cubs game. He loved Chicago. So I know he's looking down and smiling, and we're really happy. We're really happy. Yeah. Very touched.
Yeah, I was, so honored to have gotten to know him pretty well through the years. Talked to him many, many times here on the radio show and also on WGN television, and any time that he was in town, usually for a benefit for Loyola or St. Ignatius. I mean, he never stopped giving back, Courtney, did he, to the city of Chicago, right?
No. I mean, I think his heart was always in Chicago, and I think vice versa. Chicago always had him in their heart, so it's been a pretty sweet mutual relationship.
Yeah. Talk to me a little bit about what it was like growing up as Bob Newhart's kids. He was, I mean, maybe that's weird to, you know, for you guys to reflect, but, you know, he was one of the most popular comedians, entertainers, really, in the world. And you had the good fortune of, you know, having him at home to call him dad.
I mean, you know, honestly, I didn't know any differently by the time I was born. He was already pretty well known. But I think, you know, it kind of speaks to his Midwest roots. He really didn't ever let it get to his head. And I think the one thing that most people said in meeting him was how nice he is and, you know, how normal he was. And I think his Chicago roots definitely kept him grounded and kept him just an average guy that was doing a not so average thing, you know? So he kept it pretty normal at home. Maybe he was a little bit funnier than the rest of the dads, but he was pretty normal.
That was one of the things that I took away. I mean, I thought that I knew him fairly well from our many interviews over the years, but at the memorial that took place earlier this year, at which I was honored to be asked to come and speak, along with just a who's who of television, you know, people who knew Bob 100 times better than I did, but just talking about what a great guy he was and how nice he was and how normal he was. And, you know, Tim, it just reminded me about his Chicago roots, but also how he must have stood out in that weird land of Los Angeles. Here's this normal guy in this field of oddness.
Well, you know, I'm going to trace it back to the Cubs because he was just, he flew the W, and that was his greatest year when they won the World Series. And I'll tell you, I'm an Angelino, so my hero isn't some TV star or movie star. It was Vin Scully. You know, he was my guy.
Sure.
And for my dad, it was, I don't know, I'm sure you remember Jack Brickhouse.
Of course.
Remember? Of course. Yeah, he was, I remember when I was a little kid, my dad met Jack Brickhouse. It was the same impact. And he was also friends with Ernie Banks and his wife.
Wow.
And I just remember when they got together, it was one of those things, like, I can't believe I know Ernie Banks. You know, it was just like, it was the foundation of being a Cubs fan and being from Chicago was just always with him.
Yeah. Isn't that something that's such an interesting perspective? Here is, you know, your dad, one of the most famous people in the world, you know, except you guys fanboy over somebody else. And I got to admit, when I started working at WGN, this was back in the early 90s, Jack Brickhouse, I couldn't even speak when I first met him. I was, you know, because I grew up watching Cubs games and Jack Brickhouse, and he couldn't have been nicer and more welcoming. And, you know, it was just the greatest thing in the world. So in a way, I can relate to that when you get to meet your heroes like that.
Yeah.
Was your dad's demeanor at home similar to what we saw on stage? I mean, he was, you know, kind of low key, always very observant. You know, did you get the comedy at home, or was it a completely different experience?
I mean, I think he always tried comedy out on us. We were kind of his first round of audience. You know, he'd come down and have an observation from the newspaper, whatever it was, kind of try it out on us, and we were probably his hardest critic. So if it made it past us, it was a good chance that it made it.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, I remember when he met my soon-to-be husband for the first time, and I said, you know, my dad doesn't fill the air with a lot of nonsense. So if he has nothing to say, he's not going to say anything. And he was that way. I mean, when he spoke, you wanted to listen, but he didn't feel the need to fill the air if he didn't have much to say. Yeah. So he was pretty quiet.
But when he did speak, though, it was so engaging. It's like he drew you into whatever it was that he was saying in his low-key, you know, sort of a signature stammering way of saying it. I think that, you know, that's what made him so special to so many people. So, what about you know, your dad's relationship with Don Rickles is, you know, so famous. So that must have meant that the families did things together. Was that the case?
You know, and that's what I was going to tag on when Tim was talking about the Cubs. My parents, our parents, definitely picked their friends based on morals and values. And the people that we grew up with were people that knew the importance of family, knew the importance of friendships and the rest of it. And I mean, Don Rickles was my godfather. You know, we had lots of godparents that my parents really did feel were their best friends. And they traveled the world with the Rickles. We had, you know, we had Christmas with the Rickles, and we had Hanukkah with the Rickles. We did everything with them. It was very, it was as tight a family as it could be.
Same kind of experience.
I would say that, you know, talking about how Dad was so impressed with Ernie Banks and Jack Brickhouse and his character, their character and all that. My dad said once, you know, he was supposed to have dinner with the Rickles and the Sinatras, and it just wasn't something they were particularly looking forward to. My dad called Uncle Don and said, did you ever think in your wildest dreams that you would grow up one day to figure out how to get out of dinner with Frank Sinatra? You know, it was like, he lived for Ernie Banks and Jack Brickhouse, but I mean, he admired Sinatra, but from afar, I think he was sometimes friends with him under duress, you know?
I love that. Well, I sure am looking forward to seeing you guys again this coming Friday.
Yeah.
September the 5th. The ceremony for the street sign unveiling will be at 11 o'clock this morning. We'll be there with our WGN cameras. So, you know, if people can't come out to actually see the street sign unveiling in person. We'll be able to show it to you on WGN television. That's the 5800 to 5900 block of North Sheridan Road in the Edgewater neighborhood. That's the building that we saw in the famous show open of the Bob Newhart Show. Saw him, stroll in to see Suzanne Plachette waiting at the door for him. That's the building, and that's where the ceremonies will take place. There'll be some speeches, and we'll look forward to seeing Bob's kids out there. Tim Newhart, Courtney Newhart, Albertini, and Jennifer Newhart, the third sibling, who will also be there. And guys, thank you so much for joining us this morning. Really appreciate it. We look forward to seeing you on Friday.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Bob Newhart's kids joining us. We'll update the news and then get into our A-list interviews for today. Benedict Cumberbatch, Olivia Colman, Andy Samberg, Kate McKinnon talking about their new movie, The Roses, with me next. And this is Dean Richards. Our Sunday morning show continues with my Dean's List, A-list interviews with the stars. And we've got some good ones for you today. We'll get to those in just a moment. First box office numbers for the weekend. This horror movie, Weapons, is just, if you'll excuse the expression, killing at the box office. It has bounced back into the number one spot. So far, it's taken in another $10 million for the weekend. It's a grand total now, cumulative total, $132 million. Nobody expected that to happen. Also, I think something that nobody expected to happen, beating all of the other new movies that are out there in the number two spot at the box office, is the 50th anniversary re-release of the movie Jaws, the famous shark movie. It's been digitally cleaned up and is back on big screen the way Steven Spielberg intended for it to be shown, and it is out there for a limited release. It's not going to be out there, super, super long, but it is for the Labor Day weekend, and so far it is doing real well. It's made $8.1 million in its re-release, so that's good. The number three movie of the weekend so far, Caught Stealing. Number four is Freakier Friday. And number five is the movie that's called The Roses, which I liked, I think, better than most of all the other critics. Everybody can have, there is no right or wrong opinion or review. But I did notice that many of the reviews are rating this movie based on what they thought about the movie for which this is based, the 1989 movie The War of the Roses with Kathleen Turner and Michael Douglas, which I thought was a pretty great movie. It's incredibly dark and evil and mean, but it's a dark comedy. So, I don't know, I guess supposed to be that way. But that's basically what this new movie is on, about a very happily married couple whose lives change. He loses his job and is suddenly taking care of the kids in the house. She, Olivia Colman's character, becomes a chef, and through a whole series of events becomes a very famous celebrity chef. So, she's living the high life and he's back home changing diapers, and the relationship changes. And some bitterness begins to develop between the two of them. And that's where things, you know, kind of fall off the rails a little bit. The movie is not as mean or as evil as the first movie, but I just thought the writing in this movie, the dialogue, was so smart and so crisp. It's one of the things I like most about this movie. And you want to talk about on-screen chemistry. Benedict Cumberbatch and Olivia Colman, you know, both sort of royalty of British acting, taking on a movie like this, you know, a dark comedy, is just something that neither of them have ever done before. So it was really fresh and different, but they have an electricity together which is tangible, and I think that's why I like this movie so much and why I gave it a Dean's List A. Not a lot of people are rating this movie as highly as I did, so, you know, just my opinion, but I think it's a pretty smart movie. That just opened in theaters, and I don't know, about a week or so ago, we caught up with Olivia and Benedict in a Zoom chat and talked a little about their new movie, The Roses.
I love this movie so much.
Thank you, Dean.
It is your chemistry. It is the writing that is so smart. Is it apparent to you, when you pick up the script, that there's something electric about the words that they want you to say?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you do get a sort of gut feeling. And this Tony is, he's a naturally very funny. Yeah.
He's just brilliant at tone, and he's painfully. I mean, I don't think I've ever read a script so many times and still found it funny.
Yeah, that's
and
a good.
Yeah, it just also for a read through on Zoom to work can be a delight. As we know from COVID onwards, it's a pretty rare thing. And that's what we had to do, and it was delightful.
On the Zoom, actually, the first read through, when all these little cameras kept popping up, we went, Kate McKinnon, Andy Samberg.
Oh, that alone was
so chill. It was, yeah.
But just to sort of be in each other's audience as well,
yeah,
and to be in the script's audience, it zings, and it's also got depth to it. I mean, that's really what Tony does so remarkably well. He can dial up the tone to an absurd degree, but still mix it with authenticity and pain, as well as dark, very funny Australian comedy.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's also the chemistry that you both have as well. And I don't know how you define that or how you can create it. Is it either there or it's not there? Is that pretty much so?
Yeah.
You can fudge it together. You can. We didn't. We have it because we're friends and we've wanted to work with each other for a while as friends and in my case, somebody who adores her work. And I think it's you know, there's something for nothing there. And the project was kind of built around our wish to work with each other.
Yeah.
Which is very flattering in itself. But it's also a testament to the fact that I think people have faith there would be a good chemistry of every description. And I think after a while people get to know who you are as well as how you work, and therefore it's not such an unknown risk, really.
I suppose, yeah, because
we've been doing it for a bit.
Yeah.
You know.
Tried and tested.
Yeah. I was not going to say old hands, but that we kind of have to face up to it. We are we're old hands.
I think also maybe part of this is I'm not used to seeing you both in a comedy like this, and a dark, really dark comedy to begin with. So it was really nice to see you both outside of how we know you best.
Yeah, I suppose. Well, for me in the UK, I started in comedy, so the UK are quite used to it.
Yeah.
But
maybe the world does know you for your
funny, isn't it? Maybe.
I think maybe.
Yeah, but I love that everyone's going to watch you be hilarious.
I've done a bit, a tiny bit, but again, probably just in the UK. But, you know, obviously Sherlock is it's a detective series, but it's very, very funny.
Yeah.
And so is Start of Ten and a few other. But anyway, the point is, yes, I wanted to do this as well because it was stretching into a realm of kind of comedy that I have got a lot of. Yeah,
and we get to do a bit of everything in this, which is really, from an acting point of view, just fun.
It's so great. It was so fun. And, you know, I started to wonder about myself because I'm such a big fan of the War of the Roses movie.
Yes.
And I thought, what's wrong with me that I love these mean, evil characters.
Oh, no, I think that's a good sign.
It's a good thing.
Because it means, like, you're not doing it at home, but yeah. You do find it, because you can watch.
Vicarious thrill. And yeah. Yes, exactly. This is a cautionary tale. Yes. And it's that, but for the grace of God, go I. So the fact that you're drawn to this material means that...
I think that's a good sign.
It's fine. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, Benedict Cumberbatch and Olivia Colman. Number one, I could listen to their accents all day. It's just very soothing and so civil, right, to hear their British accents. They're delightful people. I've interviewed them both many times. I like the movie. I like this movie, The Roses, because really, I mean, there is the dark comedy element of it all, not nearly as dark as The War of the Roses from 1989, but this really is a movie about relationships and marriages and dealing with changes that happen within a relationship, to, you know, inside of a marriage, and, you know, how you deal with it. I don't want to overanalyze it, but really the movie is sort of about that as well. It is rated R. It's in theaters right now. And it co-stars, there's been a lot of talk about Saturday Night Live this week because three or four of the current cast members got let go. But two of the best actors ever from Saturday Night Live also co-star in this movie, The Roses. Andy Samberg and Kate McKinnon. Talked with them one-on-one as well. We'll hear that next. It's 11:51. Coming up, we'll get to our Food Time segment today. We've got Eataly Chicago stopping by to talk about some of the things that they have there, but also a special event coming up at Eataly that sounds amazing, which is called All You Can Eataly Septemberfest, an event that you can attend where it's all you can eat. And at a place like Eataly, that's pretty special. So we'll find out more about that coming up in our next half hour. Right now, I want to get back to my A-list interviews with the stars. The new season of Saturday Night Live is a couple of weeks away now. I think October 4th is the exact date where they will launch season 51. Among the many seasons of Saturday Night Live, two of the standout performers have been Andy Samberg, number one, who brought us so many of those great short films over the years. In particular, he did so many things so well on that show, but those short films are so memorable. And Kate McKinnon delivered some of the funniest characters, some of the most biting characters, some of the most outrageous moments on the show. So it was not a big surprise that when they were casting this new movie, The Roses, that they would bring two of the funniest people to be part of the supporting cast of this movie. Andy Samberg and Kate McKinnon both co-star, along with Benedict Cumberbatch and Olivia Colman. They play best friends and get off some great lines. They're very entertaining in the movie as well. And a couple of weeks ago in a Zoom chat, we sat down and talked with them about how this movie works so well. And I wondered what it was like for these two comedy geniuses to be working with these two very serious British actors. I wondered if that was at all intimidating.
Certainly in watching Benedict and Olivia work, I think it was clear as soon as we showed up that they were firing on all cylinders. For us, I think we knew that we would find the comedy part of it, no problem. And then, you know, it was pretty seamless.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What I didn't expect exactly was like the group cohesing in the way that it did. We all eight of us just went out to dinner every night and became so, it was just a good group. It just was like magic. It was so fun to shoot on and off screen.
Do you go into something like that? Because Benedict and Olivia are, you know, they're English drama, more serious. You guys are, you know, comedy. You know, do you go into that feeling a little intimidated by the formality of it all? I don't know how to put it exactly.
A little, definitely a little intimidated by their pedigree as actors, but the movie is comedic in nature. So, and the fact that it's written by Tony and directed by Jay Roach, who has done so much comedy, in my talks with Jay and Tony, I felt like I understood what my job was, which is really the only thing that makes me nervous is when I don't know what I'm supposed to do in a situation. Mm-hmm. So, certainly going in being like, holy cow, these are two of our best working right now. This is going to be interesting.
Yeah, I'm such a big fan of the War of the Roses movie, and I was so glad that this was significantly different from that.
Same,
I mean,
on
based
both,
on,
yeah.
But significantly different that, you know, had the essence of it, and it just made me wonder why I like these two movies so much. I wonder if there's part of me or part of people who like seeing others treat other people so poorly and so, you know, meanly and viciously. Do you think that's part of it, Kate?
Well, it's like the banter is vicious and cutting and brilliant, but they love each other. They get such a kick out of each other in the beginning, and throughout their relationship, it's almost as if the wit of the banter is like they're delighting in each other, even as they're cutting each other down. And I think that, the genesis of their relationship somehow like floats them through all of these like life events that sort of cut them down as individuals. And, I think that's saying something.
Hey, Kate, we're looking forward to you coming to Chicago for the Humanities Festival.
Oh, I'm excited.
October 4th.
Yeah.
To hear more about your follow-up to your children's book.
I'm so excited. I had the best time there last year, and I'm so excited to come back.
Dean Richards, Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
Hey, good looking.
Get this food party started. It's 12:13 and time to eat. Welcome into Food Time, Chicago Radio's only cooking and dining show. The award-winning All Things Edible program heard every Sunday at this time. So-called final weekend of grilling. Although I don't think I know anybody that it's like, oh, Labor Day, I better put my grill away. I think most people keep going when the snow comes, but plenty of people even keep doing it no matter how snowy or cold it is outside. We'll talk about couple of recipe ideas, things we did on our TV cooking segment both last week and things that we've got coming up for this week, because we are getting into tailgating season. I want to talk about that a little bit as well. But I've been looking forward to having our next guest on the show for quite some time now. If you were watching the TV morning show a couple of weeks ago, we spent a full morning over at Eataly Chicago, which is just a fantastic, fantastic food emporium of mostly Italian foods, I guess I would say. But we did some cooking classes there. We showed off some of the great things that they have at Eataly Chicago, and I wanted to share some of that on our show today. David Malzahn is the Eataly Ambassador. Is that your correct title?
brand ambassadors.
I feel like you should have a crown or a scepter.
The
or,
funniest story is that at the store, they call me the grand ambassador.
I like that.
I would like a top hat and maybe a sash or something that says grand ambassador.
Yeah, that would be, I think you deserve that.
I'd look silly, though.
That's part of why I would enjoy seeing you dressed that way, I think, because how ridiculous it would look. How long you've been working there for? Quite a few years.
Yeah, no, I was part of the opening team 12 years ago. Part of the opening management team that worked at the cheese counter there, and
I think that's where I first met you.
Yeah, absolutely.
At the cheese counter, we got to kind of know each other really over the counter, and
absolutely,
you making recommendations and suggestions and things like that.
That's exactly what we do. I mean, you come up there, especially to, as you were mentioning, a food emporium. The cheese counter can be very daunting for folks.
Oh, it's heavenly.
It is heavenly.
It's heavenly. But yes.
You need somebody to help you out. So, that's why, myself and the other cheesemongers and all the staff is there, well aware of what we have behind the counters and also in the on the shelves, too.
Yeah. Am I describing Italy correctly, aside from the fact that I wanted to make it four stories?
When
really it's only two.
Hey, but it's 63,000 square feet.
It's gigantic.
It's
gigantic. The stuff is everywhere. Food, both prepared and not prepared, and things that you can take home. And
well, that's the whole thing. The idea is that it's eat, shop, and learn. So we have several restaurant outlets. Shop, as in we have all the retail goods. So if you have a dish like in the restaurant, say you have like a tagliatelle bolognese, and you go, man, I want to duplicate this at home. You can do that there by shopping the retail section.
Yeah, actual ingredients that we
absolutely.
Use,
yeah. I mean, every day we're open. Our pasta shop is open, making fresh pasta. Alex and her team are over there killing it, making some great fresh pasta. So you get your tagliatelle right there. Right across from there is our meat counter, where you can pick up all of the meat ingredients, proteins that you would need to make the bolognese sauce. You need some tomatoes to get in there? Guess what? Of course. Plenty of tomato product to choose from. And then we've got produce, so you need to make a little, a sofrito, if you call it in Italian, at that point. And then, of course, the last thing you want to stop for with tagliatelle bolognese? Parmigiano Reggiano, of course.
Absolutely. I mean, the cheeses are amazing. One of the things that we did when we did the TV segments there a couple of weeks ago is you kind of walked us through many of the classes that you have. There is a cooking school.
There is, yes.
That you have. Explain some of the classes. I learned how to make mozzarella. I made mozzarella from scratch.
You did, and you did very well. You did very well.
I can't believe it that I did that. Well, we did lots of things, but I just – every time that I've had mozzarella since then –
you've compared it
like
to what you've made.
Store-bought. It's like, oh, this is garbage that I'm buying in the grocery store compared to the fresh that we made that day.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. Well, that's the third component, eat, shop, and the last one is learn. One of the most important thing is that we are championing. I can't even say that word.
I know.
We're champions of the Italian way of life, okay, and the experiences that you get there. And one of the things is we're proud of is to be able to show off how you can do these things. Classes like, for example, the mozzarella. And I think we did a pizza class, too. We did a little pizza class where, the other day on Friday I was doing a pizza class. People are making their own dough. Then we're making our pizza. I'm cooking them off for them and bringing it in. I work very closely with our chef de cuisine, Jose, who oversees the school and also the events side of things. And we put together some really great classes. You can always find out about it on our website, italy.com/Chicago. Check out the events and classes. And they're going pretty much Tuesday through Sunday. I know that when my partner Stephanie and I stopped by today, pick up some goodies for you and the crew, stopped by and Chef Jose was setting up a gelato class. So he's getting ready to do that. And then he's got a class later on this afternoon.
We'll get back to the classes in a minute, and maybe some things that people can do at home.
Yeah,
but I want to get the first reminder about the special event that you've got coming up. on September 26th.
Correct.
That is called All You Can Eatily.
Yes.
September Fest.
Yes.
Which is going on that evening, September 26th, 7:30 to 11 p.m. You had me at All You Can Eatily.
And this is a yearly event. We've been doing this for a long time. September Fest is something that most of our guests have become accustomed to. And this year we really wanted to blow the top off by calling it All You Can Eatily. Quite literally, we've got 40 different food stations for you to partake in, 30 other stations with non-alcoholic beverages, wine, spirits, cocktails and whatnot. So this is going to be a great night, one of the nights that we always look forward to as a team over at Eatily to hosting, because it's basically what we do at about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. We shut the doors. Then we transform all of Eatily, all two floors and all 63,000 square feet, into basically a giant Italian festival at that point, where then we open the doors to our closest friends at that point, who have purchased tickets, of course, come in, and unlimited food and beverage. And not only that, the cool thing is we always have entertainment. This year we're going to have some live music. We're also inviting a comedy troupe in to do some comedy with us too. And as I had mentioned about the doing demos and cooking demos and making it really immersive for people to come in, not just to sit down, eat, and drink at that point, but really feel like you've stepped into an Italian festa at that point.
Right. And what kinds of foods are served during this?
Just about anything you can imagine. Of course, pastas are going to be a big one. We've got ravioli with butternut squash as we're getting closer to the fall season at that point. Several different salads, seafood. I think the station that probably I will be working at, because they seem to sling me on this one all the time, is the Wagyu slicing station.
Oh, my.
So if you love Wagyu beef, this is going to be and it's unlimited, so we're getting an awful lot of this Wagyu.
Yeah.
And you mentioned, September's a pretty big month for us. In fact, this weekend we have a big Wagyu sale going on right now, 50% off select cuts of Wagyu. So speaking of grilling and stuff like that, it's a perfect thing to do it. But if you have never sampled it before, never tried it before.
Yeah, there's a big difference.
It is. And also this is going to be your opportunity during the September Fest All You Can Eatily to come by and try it.
So sample.
Try before you buy.
Yeah. Again, that's All You Can Eatily, September Fest, Friday, September 26th, 7:30 to 11 p.m. Best way to get tickets for this on the website?
On the website, eatily.com/Chicago. Again, events and classes, it'll take you right there. And I was just informed before I came here that the tickets are going right now at $110. Okay, for the experience. And starting tomorrow, they're going to take $10 off.
Oh.
So a discount. So $100 for a night of all-you-can-eat food, beverage, and, of course, the entertainment and the immersive experience of hanging out at Eatily. And imagine yourself in the piazza of an Italian village.
Yeah. Let me take a break. We'll come back and talk more about the classes, other things going on at Eatily Chicago. It's 12:24.
Chicago's very own WGN.
Dean Richards, Sunday morning. Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
12:37. This is Dean Richards. Food Time, Chicago Radio's only cooking and dining show. With David Malzahn, who's here with us today from Eatily Chicago. And we talk about some of their classes and some things that you can do for your Labor Day cookout. We've got a lot of interesting food things coming up. But also, we have to say, David is a former radio guy, right? This is true. Bringing back the memories for you here, right?
It is. It's scary.
I bet
memories.
You've never done radio with Italian music playing before in the background.
I have never done that before. Yeah. Never. But it does make me think I need to get that top hat and that sash with that music playing behind me as I walk around the piazza.
Yeah, that's right. Where did you do radio?
I did radio at several different places. The Mix for a while.
Oh.
Was weekends and Sunday mornings was great because I would do the very early morning shows, the public service affairs when I first started out.
Oh, yeah.
And then I would drive home. At the time, I was programming a radio station in Rockford.
Okay.
And driving home, of course, I'd listen to you.
Oh, that's funny. We got to listen to something.
Hey, and it was great. It always still is, for crying out loud. But yeah, worked there and then also worked on the air and also programmed 100.3 here in the city.
Oh, too. Very nice.
So, for a time.
Very nice. Some radio background, and you made the wise decision to get out of radio.
Well, I think after getting canned a couple times, I said, you know, I need
That'll
to take
do
more.
It.
Yeah, I need to maybe...
Maybe find something... So I think you definitely landed on your feet over at Italy. Chicago,
definitely.
Putting on all those classes, and what is the most popular of all the classes that you do over there?
I would say there's two that fall into that category. Our pizza a la Paula class is
that kind of like what you did with me?
Exactly.
Where we made the dough from scratch.
Correct. And then we actually stretched it out and whatnot, and then we did toppings,
right.
And then I went off and cooked it, came back, and of course... You devoured it, so.
Well,
that will happen.
Somebody's got it. It didn't want to go to waste.
Yeah, and you know that's the one of the classes that I would say that probably the most popular. People want to learn how to make pizza. Typically, when we get folks who come in, they've already done pizza several different times, and some of them successfully, other ones not successfully. And it gives us the opportunity for them to learn the true Italian way to actually do pizza. Pizza alla Paola, which is really the Roman style pizza. It's not a deep dish pizza or anything like that, or the Naples style pizza. This is the one where if you've been in Rome, pretty much on every corner they have these. It's about a meter long by about a foot wide. You go in, you say, I'd like 200 grams of this pizza alla Paola, and they'll cut it for you and you weigh it. And it's more of a street food, really, than anything else, kind of a different service style.
Well, the thing about this class, I could see where it'd be a fun sort of communal activity for a group of friends or a party, birthday party or something like that, because it's just fun to like get your hands in the dough. And
it is, and
if you've got a group of people around you, you're laughing and probably having a little bit of wine while you're doing it.
Absolutely, that's the best part.
At the same time, you're actually learning how to make actual pizza dough.
And that's to that point, we have a private events coordinator. Her name is Laura, and we do private events. This week, I'll be doing a mozzarella class for roughly 35 people. So, but it's a company that's coming in. It's kind of a team building idea at that point. And as we're getting closer to the holidays, we do the pizza classes where we do the larger format instead of on the TV show, we were doing small individual ones. And that's typically what our classes do, our consumer classes. But the private events, usually it's the full size, 1 meter by 1 foot at that point. And you usually get five people around a station and everybody is stretching. We put a challenge on it. Who does the best use of toppings? Who has the most interesting shape that they've done with their pizza?
It's fun.
Exactly. And to your point, you had people come into the class right away, whether it's a consumer class or it is a private class at that point. You get a welcoming glass of Prosecco, and then you know we give ply you up with a little bit more wine as the class goes along.
One of the things that I love when I say that I want to move into Italy, it's because like everywhere you turn, there's something more delicious and more interesting. There's a huge section of pastas.
Yes.
I don't mean the fresh pastas, which you can certainly get, but packaged pastas. And how do I know what I'm buying over there? How do I know if I'm going to get something good? Or if I should go to the grocery store and just get, Prince Spaghetti Day.
Here's the thing. And when I do our market tours, and I typically do market tours on Saturday around noon, and I take eight guests around, and we talk a little bit about things just like pasta or olive oil and whatnot. Yeah. When we get to the dried pasta section, we really talk about the difference between industrial pasta and the artisanal made pastas that we sell at Eataly. Because people will come in and go, hey, we go to the Jewels and I can buy Prince Spaghetti for $2.
$1.
Why is this now $8, $9? Why is that like that?
Right.
First thing, it's coming from Italy. Okay, that's the first thing. The second thing is the process is much different than the industrially made pastas. Industrially made pastas made to feed the masses, made quickly. So that way they make it that day, they get it to market, they get the money, the cycle keeps going and going and going. The artisanal pastas take a lot more time, okay? Plus, they have a lot less ingredients, okay? Here's the thing. Industrial pastas, typically what they'll do is they will make them fast, dry them fast to get them to the market fast. The ones that are artisanally made, what they'll do is they'll take their time with it. Example, an industrial pasta, depending upon the shape, can dry anywhere from 3 hours to 6 hours. The artisanal pastas that we sell at Eataly, those can take upwards of 24 to 48 hours worth of drying time.
Yeah.
Okay, just nice and slowly dried.
Is there a difference? I mean, can I taste the difference?
I believe you can. I believe you can, depending upon how much you how much sauce you soak it in at that point. That really makes the difference. If you tried them side by side, I think you'd definitely
The texture.
Big time.
Right.
Yeah, you talk about industrial pastas. Usually those pastas take you, maybe top end 8 minutes, 10 minutes to cook at that point,
right,
to what they would call al dente. Most of the dried pastas that we have are going to take somewhere around 12 minutes. Maybe 15 minutes.
A
little bit longer.
What about, somebody told me once that if you're shopping for dry pasta, look at the color. Mm. That the color of the dry pasta will tell you how it's going to taste.
Absolutely. When I do the market tours, I give our guests a piece of the industrial pasta and a piece of the artisanally made pasta. The artisanally made pasta has almost like a tan or a beige color to it. Mm-hmm. The pastas that are industrially made are kind of yellow. Here's the deal. When they actually heat that pasta up at a high temperature, they're kind of cooking it at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they're cooking out some of the nutrients and they're cooking it. When it's dried naturally at about 70 degrees for 24 to 48 hours at that point, they don't have to add anything back into it. They're not cooking it. All the nutrients that you need for your body at that point to digest still remains inside of there. A lot of times if you take a look at pastas on most grocery store shelves, it says enriched pasta. Why do they have to enrich it? They either have milled out a lot of the nutrients or they've cooked them out.
Yeah.
You take a look at the ingredients on the back of the box. Those industrial pastas have like 7 ingredients. Okay, the ingredients that come from artisanal pastas made in the Gragnano area of Italy, down in Campania, have only 2 ingredients. Only 2, water and semolina flour.
Yeah.
That is it.
So we should look for the darker tan.
Yeah, like more of a beige. I mean, you can take a look. The industrial pastas almost take on a yellowish hue to it,
all right,
in my opinion.
All right.
Yeah.
Good to know. I'll take a break. Some recipes, things that you can do at home for the Labor Day weekend coming up next. WGN. David Malzahn is here from Eataly Chicago. Their big event, your All You Can Eataly Septemberfest event, is coming up Friday, September 26th. Incredible food. All you can eat. All you can eat and drink, right?
Yes, 40-plus Italian bites, including proteins like the Wagyu beef we had talked about, pasta dishes, salad dishes, seafood at that point. And on top of that, you've got 30-plus different wines and spirits and non-alcoholic beverages to enjoy at that point.
I'm going to go camp out in front of Eataly now just to get in line.
To get the ticket. I got you. Okay.
Yeah, 43 East Ohio. If you want to get more info, Eataly. Eataly.com.
Correct.
/Chicago.
Correct. That'll get you right there.
Get all the info on that. All right. So it's the Labor Day weekend. People are doing a lot of grilling this weekend.
Sure.
You know, trying to get it in. What are some things that people can do today or tomorrow out on the grill?
In regards to the grill, I'm going to give you a couple things to complement what you would have on the grill.
Okay, sure.
Okay, I don't want to go too far down the rabbit hole there. Of course, if you want to come by Eataly, and I encourage you to, this weekend we've got our Wagyu sale going on, certain selected cuts of Wagyu steak at 50% off.
Yeah, that's
kind of hard to beat at that point.
That's a pretty good deal.
And don't mess with it. If you're going to be grilling, the art of Italian cooking really is the simplicity of it. Okay? So when we do grilling at Eataly, or if I do grilling feeling at home at that point. It's really not a bunch of sauces and things like that. We want the proteins to really kind of shine, or the vegetables to shine.
I want to taste the protein, whatever it is.
Absolutely.
And really, for me, I keep it so simple with maybe, you know, like salt, mm-hmm. pepper, and maybe a little oregano.
Sure. Absolutely.
Because I don't want the Greek police to come and catch me cooking if I'm cooking something without oregano on it.
That's
so
okay.
What kind of sides then are you talking about?
First offhand, caprese salad.
Oh, nice.
Okay, we're right at the tail end of where tomatoes are really popping right now. We get a Stephanie, my partner, and I, we get a box from a local farmer's market every week, and it was loaded with some tomatoes and some corn.
So delicious.
Absolutely. Yeah. So caprese salad, and keep it very traditional to lean into that simplicity. A true caprese salad from the Isle of Caprese should simply be vine-ripened tomatoes right from the garden, mozzarella, preferably buffalo milk mozzarella, if you can find it, and of course you can find it where? At Italy.
Well, I'll be happy to come to your house and make some, now that I know how to make it. I'll come to your house and make some homemade.
And then just, exactly, you can do that. Just a little bit of basil, extra virgin olive oil, really good stuff. And some sea salt. That's it. A lot of people want to garner it up with some balsamic or other things like that.
See, I put balsamic on mine.
That's not traditional. Yeah. But that's okay. We'll give you a pass.
Maybe I'll stop.
You know, try it this way, and then if you want to put the balsamic on there, do it.
I don't want the Caprese police to come to my house.
The Greek police or the...
I don't want any police at my house.
No police action.
Period.
The other thing is now if you're growing basil, are you doing any basil at all?
I do have basil. I do have fresh basil. It's the greatest.
Perfect time for pesto, okay? Pesto is another, again, super, super simple. You're talking about basil, pine nuts, garlic, sea salt, extra virgin olive oil, and Parmigiano Reggiano, and that is it.
Yeah.
That's really it. Just be careful. I do it at home in my food processor.
Right, me too.
And just be careful not to – I did a pesto class where we actually use a mortar and pestle, and one of the guests said, boy, this has never seen my pesto this green before, and it's probably because they left the food processor going too long, and you've aerated all of a sudden this pesto, and it's now this kind of almost lime green instead of a bright, brilliant green.
Just a few pulses processor.
That's all you need.
You can't go too crazy.
Yeah.
With there. I've never done it in with the mortar and pestle.
No, we have a class.
Give it a try.
You'll have to come by. And
I have one. I'm just too lazy. What? I have to do this myself? Are you crazy?
It does take a little bit, but you know, Italians will tell you, Italian chefs will tell you that they would prefer to use the mortar and pestle simply because you're not heating the actual basil or any of the ingredients.
That makes so much sense.
You're not cooking it at that point. It's the same thing. If you've ever seen anybody take a jar of pesto or make pesto and then put it inside of a saucepan and then heat it up, they're doing it a complete disservice at that point. What you need to do really is allow, whether it's the pasta or the meat or the fish dish that you're doing, let that heat up the pesto. You're not cooking the pesto at all. It should be a raw sauce that goes on and accompanies either a pesto or a caprese salad or a steak or a piece of seafood at that point. That's one of my favorite condiments to have at that point. And it freezes exceptionally well.
Right.
And in the middle of the winter, you know, January, February here, when it's cold outside, I could go to my freezer, pop out one of the little pucks of pesto. Absolutely.
It's absolutely absolute heaven. Okay, so if we're going to do some proteins on the grill, what would you do to it?
For me, I'm completely simple with that. Okay, I usually let my steaks come to room temperature. I give them a nice little salting at that point. Usually, like a kosher salt. That's what I typically use at home. Sometimes I'll use like a Sicilian sea salt, and I let that sit out for at least a half hour to 45 minutes, maybe even an hour at that point. What's happening with the salt is the salt's kind of causing this osmosis where it's actually pulling the salt in, and the longer it sits, it's actually pushing it out. You're kind of taking it in, seasoning the meat, and then pushing it out to the top at that point. What I will do with a steak typically is I'll get my grill ripping really, really hot, or I'll take my cast iron skillet and put it on there and get that ripping hot. That it's at 500 degrees, especially if it's the the cast iron skillet. I'll throw that steak right on there, sizzle it at that point, turn it over, sizzle it, slide the pan over to the side, which is cool. I'll turn off one burner, leave the other one on, turn it low, and then I finish it cooking that way to about 125, 130. I like a medium rare on the more rare side of things for me. And then when it comes off the grill, typically what I'll do is I will slice it, okay, make a nice presentation with it, and I'll finish it with like a great Tuscan olive oil and a little bit of more coarse salt and then coarse cracked pepper. That's it for me. I don't like to do anything else with it. I mean, if you wanted to, you certainly could do the pesto on the side with that. That would be delicious.
A little
delicious
garlic butter on there, maybe?
Absolutely. 100% you could do that. You know, just take a little bit of garlic, smash it up, put
just
it in.
I just put like a little dab on top and let it melt over it.
That sounds delicious.
Super delicious.
You can make compound butters for yourself. This is perfect time. It's you know, if your herb garden is really popping, get yourself some really nice butter, unsalted butter. Okay, let that come to a room temperature. Chop up your herbs, maybe a little bit of lemon zest in there, a little bit of squeeze of lemon juice, and then make yourself a compound butter where you roll it up, throw it in the freezer.
That's all heaven. These are the kinds of things you'll learn at Eataly. People want to get more info on all of this and also the All-You-Can-Eataly Septemberfest event, September 26th. What's the best way to get the info?
Just log on to our website, eataly.com/Chicago. Events and classes, that's where you go to learn all about these things and purchase your tickets there.
Good deal. David Malzahn, thanks, buddy, and we'll see you soon.